and the brother on the left.
My name is Ilyas, and I'm a student. The question is, can a woman become the head of the state?
A bit louder, please.
Can the woman become the head of the state?
The brother asked the question, can a woman become the head of a state? There is no text in the Quran which I know which states that a woman cannot become a head of a state. But there are several hadiths. For example, one hadith says that the people who have the leader as a woman will not succeed. Some of the scholars say that this only refers to a particular time in which this hadith was related, especially at the time when Persia had the leader as a queen. The other scholars say no, it refers to all the times. Let's analyze whether it is advisable for a woman to be a head of a state or not. If a woman is head of a state in an Islamic country, she may have to lead the congregational prayers. And if a woman leads the congregational prayers, in Islam, we adopt several postures like Qiyam, Ruku, Sujood, standing, bowing and prostration. If a lady is doing that in front of a gent congregation, I'm surely it will cause disturbances in the prayers. If she happens to be head of a state of a modern society like the one we have today, many a time the head of a state has to have meetings with other heads of state which are usually gents, and many a time they have closed door meetings in which no one else is allowed. And if a woman has a closed door meeting with another gent, Islam does not permit her to do that. Islam does not permit a woman to be alone with a nahmaram, with a foreign male, in closed doors. Islam does not permit intermingling of sexes. The head of the state many times receives all publicity by video shooting and the photography, and many a times it involves in close proximity with the other heads of state and with other gentlemen. Therefore, you can see photographs of the heads of state, if it's a lady, may it be Margaret Thatcher or anyone else, you find a photograph shaking hands with many men. Islam does not allow such free intermingling of sexes. The head of the state requires that it should meet the common man. A lady, if she's head of the state, it would be difficult for her to meet the common man and try and solve her problems. And science tells us that a woman, during a menstrual period, she undergoes certain behaviors, mental and psychological changes due to the release of the sex hormone estrogen. And these changes will surely disturb her in making decisions if she is head of the state. Science also tells us that the woman has more verbal and vocal skills as compared to the man. And a man has got more spatial ability. Spatial ability means the ability to imagine things, to imagine the future, to imagine a future project. And spatial ability is very important for the head of the state. A woman has been given an edge over the men in verbal and vocal skills which are required for motherhood. A woman, she may get pregnant and surely she may require rest for a few months. Who will look after the state for the few months? She may have children. Her duty as a mother is very important. And it is more practicable for a man who can do both the duties of a father as well as head of a state as compared to a woman if she has to do the duty of a mother as well as head of state. So I am more inclined to those scholars who say that women should not be made the head of state. But that does not mean that women cannot take part in making decisions. As I mentioned in my speech, they have a right to vote. They have a right to take part in lawmaking. during the Treaty of Hudaybiyah, Umm Salma, may Allah be pleased with her, she supported and guided the Prophet at a time when the whole Muslim community was disturbed. She guided him and she supported him. As you know, that though the Prime Minister or the President may be the head of the state, but many a time the PAs and the secretaries, they are the ones who make the decisions. So surely a woman can help the man in making decisions of the state. I hope that answers the question.
The next question.
I'm Vimla Dalal, advocate. I would like to ask that Islam preaches women's rights are equal to men. Why women should be in palta, and why there should be a segregation of men and women in this sort of meeting also?
Sister asked a very good question, that when Islam believes in women's rights, that men and women should be equal, then why does Islam believe in parda, and why should there be segregation of sexes like the one we are having just now? As I mentioned earlier, Islam does not believe in intermingling of the sexes. Why Islam specified parda, I will answer in a short time, and I'd like to thank the sister, because I did not have time to speak on the hijab of the woman. If you read the Quran, before the mentioning of the hijab for the woman, the Quran mentions the hijab for the man. It's mentioned through Nur, chapter number 24, verse number 30. It says, say to the believing man that he should lower his gaze and guard his modesty. The next verse, Surah Nur, chapter 24, verse number 31 says, say to the believing woman that she should lower her gaze and guard her modesty, and display not her beauty except what is that necessary of, and to draw a head covering over her bosom except in front of her father, her son, her husband, and a big list of mahram, the close relatives who she cannot marry is given, and but natural in front of the chaste woman. Besides these, she should maintain the hijab. The criteria for hijab in Islam can be found in the Quran and the Sahih Hadith. There are six criteria. First is the extent, which is the only difference between the man and the woman. For the man, he has to be covered from the navel to the knee. For the woman, her complete body should be covered. The only part that can be seen, not should be seen, is the face and the hand up to the wrist. If she wishes to cover them, she's most welcome, but not compulsory that she should cover it. Otherwise, the full body should be covered. The only part that can be seen, not should be seen, is the face and the wrist, the hand up to the wrist. This is the only criteria which differs between the man and the woman. The second criteria is that the clothes she wears should not be so tight that it reveals the figure. The clothes she wears, third point, it should not be so transparent so that you can see through. And the fourth point, she should not wear glamorous clothes, or he should not wear glamorous clothes which attracts the opposite sex. The fifth point is that a person should not wear clothes which resemble that of the opposite sex, like you find men wearing earrings. If you wear one earring, it signifies something else. If you wear two earrings, it signifies something else. It's prohibited in Islam. And the last criteria is, you should not wear clothes which that resemble of an unbeliever. These are the six basic criteria of hijab in Islam. Now coming to the question, why does Islam believe in parda, and why are the segregation of sexes? If, let's analyze the society in which there is parda and society in which there is no parda. The maximum number of crime that takes place in any country is in America. According to a report by the FBI, in the year 1990, 1,255 women were raped. These are only the reported cases. And the report says only 16% of the cases were reported. If you want the exact figure, multiply 1,02,555 with 6.25 and you get the answer. More than 6,40,000 ladies were raped in America only in 1990. And if you divide this by the number of days, divide by 365, you get a figure of 1,756 women are raped every day in America in the year 1990. And the report says every day 1,900 ladies are raped. Maybe it's the report of 1991. The American got more bold. And the last report, which came in autumn 1993, said every 1.3 minutes one woman is raped. You know why? America has given the women more rights and more women are being raped. Only 10 were arrested. 16% are reported. Only 10% are arrested. Means only 1.6% of the cases are arrested. Out of that, 50% are let free before the trial. Means only 0.8% of the rape cases are held. Means if a man rapes 125 ladies, the chances of his being caught is 1. Who would like to try? 125 ladies you rape and you get caught only 1. Out of that, 50% times you get a punishment of less than 1 year. Though the USA law tells you that for rape you have got a punishment of life imprisonment, but they say it happened only the first time, he's caught the first time, let him give him a chance. And a punishment of less than 1 year. Even in India, according to the National Crime Bureau report, which had come in the papers in the 1st of December 1992, it said that every 54 minutes, one case of rape is reported in India. Reported, huh? Every 26 minutes, one case of molestation. Every 1 hour 43 minutes, one case of dowry death. If you analyze the total number of cases of rape that are taking in a country, it will be every couple of minutes, one case of rape. I am asking a simple question. If you ask every lady to do hijab, will the rape case in USA remain the same? Will it decrease or will it increase? If you apply the hijab for every lady in India, will the rate of rape decrease? Will it remain the same or will it increase? We should understand Islam as a whole. Even suppose after that, even after a lady does hijab, irrespective of a lady does hijab or not, a man is commanded, he should lower his gaze. And if suppose after that, if a man commits rape in Islam, he receives capital punishment. You call it a barbaric law. I have asked this question to several people. Suppose, I have asked this question to many of the gents. Suppose your sister is raped, and if you are made the judge, leave aside what Islam tells you, leave aside what Indian law tells you, leave aside what American law tells you. If you are made the judge, what punishment will you give to the rapist of your sister? And all have said, death sentence. Few went to the extreme of saying, I'll torture him to death. I want to ask you a question. If you apply the Islamic Sharia law in America, will the rape case decrease? Will it remain the same or will it increase? If you apply the Sharia law in India, will the rape case decrease? Will it remain the same or will it increase? So but naturally, let's practically, you say you're giving women rights theoretically, but practically you're degrading her to a status of a concubine and a mistress. I'd like to, only on speaking on Parda, you can talk for days. Thus, I'd like to end my answer by giving a small example. Suppose two ladies, two twin sisters, who are equally beautiful, if they are walking down the street, and around the corner, there is a hooligan, who is waiting for a catch, who is waiting to tease a girl. Both twin sisters are walking, both are equally beautiful, one is in the hijab, Islamic hijab, one is wearing a mini or a skirt. Which girl will that hooligan tease? Which girl will he tease? But that is the one in the short of the mini. If a girl is wearing normal salwar kameez with the hair open, maybe the salwar kameez tight, and the other girl is wearing Islamic hijab, which girl will he tease? But that is the girl who is not in hijab. The practical proof that hijab is been ordained in Islam not to degrade the woman, but to protect her modesty.
there is an announcement for Aruna Bhurte. Your husband is calling you at the entrance. Mrs. Aruna Bhurte, could you please contact your husband outside the auditorium, please? The next question.
Yeah. Assalamu alaikum. My name is Bilal Lala and I am a revert. By profession, I happen to be a lecturer in computers. There's one question which has baffled me over the years, and that question is, why does Islam permit a Muslim man to marry a woman of his choice from Ahle Kitab, maybe Jews or Christians, and the vice versa is not permitted? Are the Muslim ladies not mushruks? Can you clarify?
So the Bilal has asked the question that Quran permits a Muslim man to marry a lady from the Ahle Kitab, but the vice versa is not true, and is correct. It's mentioned in Surah Maidah, chapter number 5, verse number 5, that on this day it has been made lawful for you all that is good and pure. The food of the people of the book has been made lawful for you, and your food has been made lawful to them. And also, besides the women who are believers, even the women of the Ahle Kitab who are chaste have been made lawful for you. If Islam gives permission for a Muslim man to marry a woman from the Ahle Kitab, why? Because when a Christian or a Jewish lady, when she marries a Muslim man, after she marries, the family of the husband will not abuse or incite any of the prophets. Because in Islam, we believe in all the prophets of the Jews and the Christians. What prophet they believe in, we believe in. We both believe in Adam, in Noah, in David, in Musa, in Isa, may peace be upon them all. Because we believe in all of the prophets, the lady, when she enters a Muslim family, she will not be ridiculed. But the vice versa, if a Muslim lady goes to a family of a Christian or a Jew, but naturally they do not believe in Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, and she will be ridiculed. That's why Islam gives permission for a Muslim man to marry a girl from the Ahle Kitab, but the vice versa is not true. Coming to the second part of the question, that aren't these Muslim women mushriks? Brother is referring to an ayat of the Quran Sharif of Surah Baqarah, chapter number 2, verse number 221, which says that do not marry unbelieving women until they believe. Even a slave woman who is a believer is better than an unbelieving woman, even if she allows you. Means, even if the Queen of England, let her be the wealthiest lady, let the lady be the most beautiful in the world, still, a jhadu wali, a slave woman who is a believer, is much better than the best lady of the world if she is an unbeliever. And the verse continues, do not marry your daughters to the unbelieving man until he believes. For a slave man who is a believer is better than an unbeliever, even if he allows you. Now another verse in the Quran tells you, from Surah Maidah, chapter number 5, verse number 72, it says, لَقَدْ كَفَّ الَّذِينَ قَالُوا إِنَّ اللَّهُ هُوَ ابْنُ مَرْيَمَ, that they are blaspheming, they are doing kufr, those who say Jesus is Christ, the son of Mary. Those who say Allah is Christ, the son of Mary. لَقَدْ كَفَّ الَّذِينَ قَالُوا إِنَّ اللَّهُ هُوَ ابْنُ مَرْيَمَ وَالْقَالَ الْمَسِيحِ, but said Christ, يَا بَنِ إِسْرَائِيلَ, O children of Israel, عَبُدُ اللَّهِ, worship Allah, رَبِّي وَرَبُّكُمْ, who is my Lord and your Lord, إِنَّمَا يُشْرِكُ بِاللَّهِ, and anyone who associates partners with Allah, فَقَدْ حَرَّمَ اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ الْجَنَّةَ, Allah will make Jannah haram for him. وَمَا بَهُ النَّارِ وَمَا لِلظَّالِمِينَ مِنْ أَنْصَارِ, and for him, he shall have no helpers, and fire shall be his dwelling place. From this verse you come to know that all those who say Allah is Christ, those who are saying Jesus Christ, may peace be upon him, his God, they are doing kufr. And one verse of the Quran says, you are allowed to marry these kafirs. You will think the Quran is contradicting itself. But as I told you, analyze the Quran as a whole. There is one more verse in the Quran, in Surah Imran, chapter number 3, verse 110, which says, Kuntum khaira ummatin ukhrijat linnas. Oh, ye are the best of people you are for mankind. Ta'muruna bil ma'ruf wa tanhauna 'anil munkar. You are for mankind, enjoying what is good and forbidding what is bad. Kuntum khaira ummatin ukhrijat linnas. Ta'muruna bil ma'ruf wa tanhauna 'anil munkar wa tu'minuna billah and believing in Allah. Walau amana ahlul kitab laqana khaira lahum. It would have been better if the people of the book had faith. Minimal mu'minuna wa akthurumul fasiqun. Among them, there are some who are mu'min. Among the Ahl Kitab, there are some who are believers, but the majority are perverted transgressors. So Quran says, you are allowed to marry the woman from the Ahl Kitab who are believers, who are mu'min, who do not believe that Jesus Christ, may peace be upon him, is God or Son of God, but to believe that Jesus Christ, may peace be upon him, is a messenger of God, and they believe in only one God. Hope that answers the question.
The next question, please.
Assalamu alaikum. मैं आकेला फातर पेकर हूँ, गवर्नमेंट ऑफ महाराष्ट्र में अंडर सेक्रेटरी. मेरा क्वेश्चन है कि इस्लाम में औरत को, चाहे वो शादीशुदा हो या गैर शादीशुदा, उसको विल करने का परमिशन नहीं है. ये क्यों है और अगर है तो उसके डिटेल्स दीजिए.
So sir, pose the question that why in Islam, whether a woman is married or unmarried, she is not allowed to make a will. It is completely wrong. It's, as I mentioned in my lecture, Islam gave economical rights to women 1300 years before the West. And I said very clearly in my talk that any adult woman who is matured, but naturally if she's not an adult, she cannot practice, because she cannot practice the right, because she won't be matured. Any adult woman, irrespective whether she's married or unmarried, has the right to own or dispose any of her property without consultation. If she wants, she can take consultation. If she wants, she need not. She has the right to even make a will. Islam does not prohibit her that. I hope that answers the question.
Excuse me, sir. We'll allow questions only from the mic. And in turn, please, we have to keep the decorum while the people who have stood for some time. The next question, please.
My name is Roshan Rangwala, a businessman. Question is, as you said that Islam gives equal right to both ladies and gents, then why men is allowed to keep four wives and ladies are kept away from this privilege? As men can think of another woman, at the same time, after marrying one wife, men can think for another woman, why ladies cannot think for another?
The brother asked the question that since Islam allows polygyny, why does not Islam allow polyandry? A man is allowed to marry more than one wife. Why isn't a woman allowed to marry more than one husband? Firstly, you should realize that man is more sexual than the woman. Point number two, biologically, a man can perform his duty as a husband even after he has more than one wife, which a woman, if she has more than one husband, she will not be able to perform her duties as a wife enough and satisfactorily. Medical science tells us that the lady during a menstrual period undergoes certain behavioral and psychological changes in which she is mentally disturbed, and therefore the majority of the quarrels that take place during the menstrual period. According to a report of the criminal record of the women in USA, most of the ladies that committed the crime was during the menstrual period. Therefore, for a wife, if she has more than one husband, to mentally adjust will be more difficult. Medical science also tells us that if a lady has more than one husband, she has chances of acquiring sexually transmitted diseases as well as venereal diseases, and she can transmit it back to the husband, which is not the case if a husband has more than one wife. And suppose
who has more than one wife, if he marries and if he has children, the identification of both the parents is possible. The father can be identified as well as the mother can be identified. In the other case, if a wife has more than one husband, you will only identify the mother, not the father. Islam gives utmost importance to identification of the parents. And psychologists tell us that if a child cannot identify his parents, he undergoes mental trauma. No wonder the children of prostitutes, they have a very bad childhood. And if that child goes for admission in the school, and if he's asked, what's the name of your father? You'll have to give two names. And you know what the child is called. There are several reasons why polygamy is not allowed. And for counter argument, if you tell me that I give you several reasons why polygyny is allowed. For example, if a couple does not have issue, and if they marry, a man is allowed to take more than one wife. If suppose the husband is sterile, can the wife take more than one husband? No. Because no doctor can give you the guarantee that the husband is 100% sterile. Even if you do vasectomy, even if you do nasbandi, no doctor can tell you that the child cannot be a father. So still, again, the identification of the child is yet in doubt. In the other case, suppose the husband, he undergoes an accident, or he becomes very severely ill. Can the wife take care of the husband? Let's analyze. Suppose the husband, if he undergoes an accident, or if he severely ill, he cannot perform his duty very well. Firstly, on the financial aspect, he will not be able to look after the family, the children and the wife. And secondly, he may not be able to satisfy the wife. Regarding the first criteria, where he cannot satisfy the children and the wife, Islam has an option. Islam allows such people to take zakat. Those people who can't make both ends meet, they can take zakat. And the second aspect, medical science tells us that a wife requires less conditions to be satisfied as compared to a husband. But still, if the wife still wants to, still if she's not satisfied, she has all the reason to take kula from the husband and marry another husband. Here, a wife taking kula is much more preferred, because here when the wife is getting divorced, she is healthy. In the other case, if she is disabled, if she is handicapped, if she is divorced, who will marry her? Hope that answers the question.